Well, let's go back to Numbers chapter 11, chapter 10 rather, and let's read again words that Moses speaks to his brother-in-law, Hobab. So Numbers chapter 10, verse 29. So there they are at Mount Sinai, and you remember that about a year before this, Moses' father-in-law, who is called in verse 29 there, Reuel, he's also called Jethro. He's got two names in the story. Sometimes he's called Reuel, sometimes he's called Jethro. And Jethro, remember, advised Moses to share the burden with the 70 elders and to divide the responsibilities. And then he went off back to Midian. And it's possible that at that time his son, Hobab, who's mentioned here, stayed on and may have stayed with Moses for that past year. And a year later, we know it's a year later because reading began in verse 11, on the 20th day of the second month of the second year, so we're a kind of year on from the events at Mount Sinai. A year later, Hobab, so verse 29, Moses said to Hobab, son of Reuel the Midianite, Moses' father-in-law. So Reuel is Moses' father-in-law. Hobab, therefore, is Moses' brother-in-law. We are setting out for the place about which the Lord said, I will give it to you. So they're just leaving Sinai and they're on their way to Canaan. Come with us, come with us, and we will treat you well. For the Lord has promised good things to Israel. He answered, no, I will not go. I'm going back to my own land and my own people. But Moses said, please do not leave us. You know where we should camp in the desert, and you can be our eyes. If you come with us, we will share with you whatever good things the Lord gives us. So they set out. We don't know whether Hobab went or not. I think tend to think from the story here that he did, but it doesn't actually say specifically. But he probably did, and we do see later on that when the Israelites come into Canaan, the Kenites are with them, and the Kenites are Hobab's people. So it looks like probably Hobab accepts the invitation. So I was down in Edinburgh this week, and we've changed the name of what we're doing. We're not calling it the revitalization track anymore. We're calling it the church development meetings, so that's what we're doing. And there were lots of things to think about. One thing that struck me was a little diagnostic question that people in churches can ask themselves and analyse their own answer. So it's something you can ask yourself just now. And it's this. Do you invite other people to come to church? Simple question. So other people, I'm not talking about people that are part of the congregation, I'm talking about people outside of the congregation, perhaps outside of any church congregation, and you invite them to come, particularly I'm thinking perhaps to a Sunday morning service. Do you invite them? And we can learn a lot, I think, not just from our answer, but from asking why do we answer as we do. If we say no, why is that? If we say yes, how enthusiastic are we in that invitation? And if we are very enthusiastic, what is it that makes us enthusiastic? If we're not so enthusiastic, what could make us more enthusiastic? We can ask that sort of question of ourselves. So here's an invitation in this short cameo where Moses and his brother-in-law are speaking together. Come with us and we will treat you well. Come with us. And we will treat you well, for the Lord has promised good things to Israel. Why would we want to invite people to come to church? What is it that we offer that people need or that people might want? Well, here's three things just from the passage itself. We offer value and purpose. Value and purpose. It's one thing. Value and purpose. Moses says to Hobab, please do not leave us. You know where we should camp in the wilderness, and you can be our eyes. So if you come with us, you'll find a place. You'll find something to do. You know the desert here. We don't. You know where we can find water. You know where we can safely graze. You know the dangers. You know the good places. You can help us. You can find a purpose. You can find a place in the community of Israel. And that's one thing the church should certainly be able to give to people. People often lack any sense of value and purpose in their lives. Perhaps they may be unemployed. They may be retired. They may be at a place in their lives where the job they're in is a dead end as far as they're concerned. And they're questioning themselves, what's my worth, what's my value? But in the church, we can all find a place. And we can all find ways of serving. We can all find a purpose. We can all use our gifts and offer them. So for a start, we should be able to offer some value and purpose. Now, we could think about that a lot more deeply, but not just now. Second thing we offer is community and belonging. Community and belonging. As Moses says to Hobab, we will treat you well, he says. We will treat you well, and later on, we will share with you whatever good things the Lord gives us. So, we'll treat you well, and we'll share. Community, belonging. You'll be part of what we are, and you'll share what we have. And people are desperate for this. So the church offers community, and it offers belonging. People are needing to be, as Moses says to Hobab, to be treated well, to share the good things of the Lord. They're needing that. And in addition, they're needing hope. That's the third thing. We offer hope. People lack hope today. Brexit was supposed to give us hope. I think many people voted for leaving the European Union in order to hopefully have a better future. That was the hope. At the moment, we feel more like the Book of Proverbs, where it says, hope deferred makes the heart sick, if you are someone who wanted Brexit. No one really knows what's going to happen now. But any sense of hope just blossoming into something great is gone. Another way the state tries to provide hope is through the national lottery. That's the state's way of giving hope. But the national lottery tends to deliver disappointment. Disappointment if you don't win, and ultimately disappointment if you do win. And truly, every time I hear of someone winning millions, I'm honest, my heart sinks for them. I think the damage that's going to do to their relationships, and the damage it's going to do to them spiritually as well. Hope is what people need. They need real hope that's going to be actually delivered, and people will be satisfied and find what they're looking for. The Lord, says Moses, has promised good things for Israel. And why would Hobab want to stay eking out a meagre living in the desert of Midian when he can travel with the Israelites to the land of milk and honey? And why would anyone in our community just want to keep on playing the lottery and keep on just going back to the same old empty promises of the world when they can have the promises of salvation in Jesus Christ? When we speak about hope in gospel terms, we're not meaning, I hope it's going to be a nice day tomorrow. We're not meaning that kind of vagueness. When we speak about hope in the gospel, we mean, hang around here because something great is going to happen. And that's what the church is saying. Just hang in here because God keeps his promises. Great things are coming. The Lord has promised good things for Israel. So, we offer good things. We offer value and purpose, community and belonging, and hope. So, given these things, why would we not invite people to join us? Well, there are lots of things to consider as we ask that question. First of all, to invite people to come and join us, we need to have the power of speech and of intelligence. Moses, a couple of years before this, really felt he didn't even have the power of speech. Remember at the burning bush, "Lord, pardon your servant," he says. "I have never been eloquent, neither in the past nor since you have spoken to your servant. I am slow of speech and tongue." Well, Moses seems to have found his tongue. And he's busy inviting people to join in the blessings of the Lord. So that's great. He's got the power of speech. You've all got the power of speech. So you need that. But you've got that. So you can invite. And you need intelligence as well, I suppose. You need enough intelligence to know what it is to invite someone. Well, I think you've all got that as well. So if you are not inviting people to church, it's not because you can't speak, and it's not because you're not smart enough to know how to invite. That's not the answer. But then there's the issue of confidence. Moses, if you go back to the burning bush, seemed to lack that completely. In the end of his exchange with the Lord at the burning bush, remember what Moses said? "Lord," he said, "just please send someone else to do it." He just hasn't got the confidence. Or that's what he thinks. But actually it was just an excuse. And often that's our excuse when we don't invite people. Say, "Oh, but I'm not confident in that sort of thing." Well, do you ever invite anyone to anything? Have you invited anyone to anything in your life? Well, yes. Invite anyone to your birthday party? Invite anyone to go out for a curry? Or to Christianity Explore meeting, perhaps? We'd like to do that soon. Or to a wedding reception or something like that. Yes, of course you have. So you have the confidence to invite people. So it's not a confidence issue. So don't use confidence or a lack of it as an excuse. When you do invite people to things, what sort of things are they? Things that excite you? Yeah, things that you feel good about? Well, shouldn't that be church? So it's good to analyse, but don't excuse yourself, because so many people do that. So many Christians say, I leave inviting other people to church to other people. Because I don't have the confidence. That's not true. If you didn't have confidence, you wouldn't invite people to anything. But you do invite people to things. So it's not a confidence issue. What about faith? We all need faith. "We are setting out," says Moses, "we are setting out for the place about which the Lord said, 'I will give it to you.' The Lord has promised good things to Israel." So there's faith. Moses has got faith. We're going to the place, and God's promised it to us, and we're going. We're going there, and God has promised it. So Moses invites because he has faith. If we don't invite, then that might suggest we don't have faith. That might not be the reason, but it might be. It could be a spiritual issue. Could be that we don't invite people to church because we don't really understand the gospel. Or we don't really understand the benefits of the gospel. Or we don't perhaps really understand why we even go to church ourselves. Because it can't just be a habit. And not a matter of faith. And if that's the case, we need to analyse that. And we need to know ourselves truly to be people who need to get faith. Who need to start committing to the promises of God in Jesus for ourselves. God is inviting us not to church. He's inviting us into his family. And we need faith to accept that invitation for ourselves. It's just there. An invitation from God. And we can just take it. We don't place any qualifications on it because God doesn't. It's a free invitation. It's a gospel that is freely offered. We need to respond to that. And having done so, then we can have the faith to invite others to respond as well. Like Moses, he's got faith. The Lord has promised. And we're going to that place. So we need faith. But if we've got the power of speech and intelligence and confidence and faith, we also need an open mind. Moses asks the question. He doesn't prejudge the answer. Sometimes we do that. Moses might have said, "Oh, Hobab's not going to be interested in going to Canaan. He's going to want to stay at home in Midian, so I'll not bother asking him." And that prejudice could be the difference between Hobab receiving the blessings of being with God's people or being out in the wilderness for the rest of his life. And it's easy to prejudge people, isn't it? It's easy to think, "Oh, she's not going to be interested. He's not going to want to know." Or even, "I've asked them before and they didn't want to go, so I won't bother asking them again." And you don't know that in the last 6 months they might have gone through a total change of life in which they're suddenly open. And we've got to be open and not dismiss anyone from inviting them to church and inviting them to Jesus ultimately. So we mustn't prejudge people's spiritual states or people's answer. We're not in a place to make that judgment. We don't know whether someone is at that moment going to say yes or no, whether they're going to be interested or not. And even if they have said no in the past, we can pray that God will change them. And then we can ask again. And maybe this time they'll say yes. There's a Middle Eastern custom that you say no when you're invited the first time, and then you say yes when you're invited the second time. And that's what happens in this story. You can see it in other stories in the Bible as well. But Moses asks, "Come with us," and Hobab answers no. And Moses asks again. And it's a custom that those who I was reading, commenting on this, reckon probably suggests that Hobab did say yes second time round. Might seem a bit alien to us, but I guess in Scotland we maybe only ask once if we ask at all. But maybe we need to ask persistently. Or if we ask and get a knock back, we pray and then we ask again. Sometimes, of course, we think it's easier for people to come if they have a church background. Hobab's got a church background, if you like. Remember, his dad, Jethro, or Reuel, is a priest. But of course, that can work both ways. There are people who've brought up in the church who hate it, and they're the last people that are wanting to go. There are people brought up in the church who are very readily persuaded to come along. But that's the same with people who've never been in church in their lives. There are some people who will come just on an invitation, some people who won't. So we can't prejudge. So we have to watch that we have open minds about the people around us and about inviting them. And that we reset our thinking about people, even if they've said no, that we don't say, "Well, that means no for the next 40 years. You might think, "Well, I asked her 30 years ago and she didn't want to come." But no, we mustn't think that. We must, even if we asked them last week, you can ask them this week. Things may have changed. We cannot prejudge. Another thing we need when we're asking people is what the Bible calls the fear of God. Because if we don't have the fear of God, the fear of men will take over. And it's easy to be intimidated by people. And if we don't invite people to church, we need to ask ourselves, are we just being intimidated by the fear of men? Are we afraid of offending people? be scared of people. Remember what Paul says. He says, since we know what it is to fear the Lord, we try to persuade men. We're more concerned with what God thinks about us than with what people think, says Paul. We've got to be like that in the community as Christians. You know, inviting someone to church, for example, might mean that someone might even take offence if they're sort of minded to be like that. And we might find that they distance themselves. But better that than that we didn't invite them. Because we don't know, they might, on the other hand, respond positively. We're not to be afraid of the responses or the reactions. That's something we're thinking about this morning as well. Sometimes people will hate us, as we saw Jesus saying to his disciples this morning. But we fear God first. You know, Hobab wasn't just a stranger that Moses came across in the desert. Hobab was family, and presumably as well a friend. Hobab is Moses' wife Zipporah's brother. And it's possible, as I said, he's been around for a year. Quite possible. And we know that sometimes the hardest people to invite are our family and our close friends. They're the hardest people to speak to. But don't we love our friends and our family? Don't we fear God more than we fear the responses of our friends and family? We can't not invite just because they're family or just because they're friends. That should be more of a reason than ever. Moses invites his brother-in-law. Here's another thing as well. Sometimes people don't invite because they kind of feel that although they're quite happy with church, they know it's kind of weird. And they know that other people might find it weird. So we need to be normal. We need to be normal people. Now, I'm sure every one of you would say, I'm very normal. You'd say that of yourselves, and we'd say of one another, I think. But church is a different kind of environment and can be very strange to people. It's got a ways of doing things that you don't find anywhere else. There's worship. And we do it in a particular way. I suppose our way is going to change when we move into the church, and we've got screens, and we are introducing hymns and so on, then that'll change. But it's still different to what people do in every other context. And the language that we use, you know, the language, although we use a modern English Bible, there are words in there that people don't use in normal conversation. Lots of words. And you know, just to know where to sit and where to stand and, you know, what to do. That can be quite strange for people. So, we have to remove unnecessary weirdness. Some weirdness you can't avoid. And the gospel itself can be weird to people too. But just as a wee challenge, if you think there's anything weird about our congregation that doesn't need to be weird, the Kirk Session would like to know about that. Because we don't want to be weird in any way that makes you feel that you can't invite your friends or your family or your neighbours to church. We don't want to be weird in any man-made way. If there is any weirdness, let it simply be that we worship God and that we preach Jesus. Another thing is, and we're nearly done with reasons, but excitement. Moses is excited. We're setting out for the place the Lord has promised. We're setting out for the place of which the Lord has promised good things to Israel, he says. It's a great journey ahead. He's really excited and he wants people to come with him. should be excited in church. And if there's anything that quells the excitement, again, we need to address that. Like, what about the preacher? Am I a problem? If I'm boring, if I'm dull, if I'm offensive, if I'm irrelevant, if I'm unclear, you need to tell me. You need to tell me what I'm doing. You need to tell me why. Because I don't want to be an obstacle to you inviting people to church. I don't want you to think, I'd like to invite people to church, but the problem is there's Roddy. You know. If that's a problem, I need to hear. And I won't be offended. I just need to hear and see if it's something I can do. There are some weirdnesses about me that probably are unreformable. But I'll try. But what I'm trying to do then is just to show there really is no excuse in the end for not inviting people to church. And if there is anything that is a problem, we need to address it. And the Kirk Session wants to address it. But you might say, okay, but how do you do it? How do you invite someone to church? You know, you don't put us on a big guilt trip that we've got to invite people to church and then not tell us how to do it. Well, how do you do it? You say, would you like to come to church? That's it. That's it, really. What does Moses say? Come with us. It's no fancy language. No kind of big speech. Doesn't get him to stand on a soapbox or, you know, put on special clothes or a special intonation of his voice. Just so you like to come. And really, you know, it needs to be that natural and that straightforward and that simple. Sometimes, of course, that may lead to conversations where we can get out of our depths. And if we do, we need to recognise when we are out of our depths and just say to the person, look, I don't know the answer to that question. But come to church and I'll introduce you to someone who might know the answer or something like that. Or just, you know, try and bring someone else in who can help and invite them again. Very soon we're looking forward to the refurbished church. But we mustn't put our hope in that. We mustn't think everything's going to be fine in there. No, it's still about people. It's about us. We've got to invite people. Hopefully we'll have an opening event, an opening gathering of some kind. I don't know what to call it. There'll be a guest service or whatever. I don't know. We haven't talked about that. But hopefully you'll be excited about inviting people to it. You need to bring other people. Not just be there yourself. I was asking someone about the impact of the Rico Tice weekend, the weekend before. Rico Tice, probably one of the biggest Christian names in the UK, the person who presents Christianity Explored, speaking in Portree and in Vegan and various things. So how did it go? I asked him, and he said, it's like this. There were lots of people, but they were all church people. And we had said to all the church people, not just Free Church, Church Scotland, all the churches, we had said to all the church people, when you go, bring a friend. In other words, they had to invite someone, or maybe many people. Now, whether they invited and very few came, or maybe they didn't invite and they just went themselves. But there needs to be probably a change of thinking in the churches that, you know, church is not for church people. Church is for everyone. And we need to invite people to come. Like Moses, we need to say, come with us. Many's a gospel sermon was preached in this. In the Authorised Version, come thou with us and we will do thee good. But it's a human invitation. It's like one man saying to another, come and join us. We need to make those human invitations to the people around us. And every so often, just like you fishermen know, you'll get a bite. Every so often, someone will come. And out of that, every so often, someone will believe. and enter into the promised land. And that makes it all worth it. Amen.